Hello, wonderful people of podcast land. Welcome back to the Jack Revelle Show. Today is one of my favorite types of episodes because I get to sit down with a fellow podcaster and chew the fat on life. Get deep into the fat end of the iceberg and really explore some philosophies and ideas and opinions on life's big questions. So my guest and co-host for today's conversation is Jamie Tones from the Flipside podcast. We take today's chat on a brisk walk around the park before settling down into our comfy chairs and getting stuck into it. Expect to learn why you are the richest you're ever going to be right now, who our doppelgangers are, what it's like to interview your parents, what principles we live by, how to remember your values, if you can be successful and happy at the same time, having a quarter-life crisis, and so much more. In other news, this episode of the podcast is sponsored by the wonderful guys at Unlimited. Unlimited is a crisp, smooth, and vegan alcohol-free beer that is perfect for those of you that want a cool and refreshing beer as the summer starts to creep in. They have won awards for their taste and their design, and at only 23 calories a bottle, it's a no-brainer to have a case of these ready to go in your fridge for when the sun starts to shine. Listeners of the show get 15% off everything online with a very special code. So just head over to www.unlimited.beer and key in the code JACK15. That's JACK15. To receive that discount across all products. Okay, now it's time to flip it on its side. See what I did there? With Jamie Tones. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Jack Revelle Show. Today's guest is the wonderful Jamie Tones from the Flipside podcast, who had me on his show a couple of weeks back. And so I thought I would do the gentlemanly thing and have this wonderful man back on, but this time for your lovely ears. So welcome to the show, Jamie.
Man, it's an absolute pleasure. No, I'm chuffed that you've invited us on.
We had such a good chat last time. I was just saying earlier for everyone listening to Jamie that we just like the conversation just flowed so naturally after just chatting and talking about different things. So we thought we'd do the same thing again today. And so instead of the sort of, so tell us about yourself question, I'm going to throw something at you that's just a bit random. And it's, what are you reading at the moment?
So at the moment, well, I'm reading, main thing that I'm reading at the minute is Richard Branson's autobiography, which I think I mentioned last time because I picked it up off like a random shelf in my building. And it's fucking amazing. It's such a good book.
Is it Finding Your Virginity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you read it or?
Yeah. I read it. It's probably one of the first business books I ever read, purely because I think that when I was reading it, I think I only knew of Richard Branson as the only businessman that ever was. I remember reading it, but how far in are you? Which part are you at?
So he's just, he's literally just bought Necker Island.
Yes.
Which is just mental. How he just like, the asking price was like 3 million. He's just like, I will give you 200,000. And he somehow got it for like 180,000 or something crazy.
But didn't he find it by like he was flying over it to somewhere else? Wasn't he looking for a recording studio location for some of his bands to get away from?
No, he lied and said he was looking for that.
Oh, that's
because he just wanted a bit of a holiday in the Virgin Islands. And obviously, if you say that you're going to buy an island, then they like fly you all around. And then. Yeah, and then he said, oh, I'll give you 200,000. And they like put his bags outside the hotel and were just like, piss off, would you?
Brilliant. Love that.
Yeah, the book that I've actually got is like this like years and years old. And it's like someone's like old boarding pass from 2012 is like stuck in it. And I've still got it in there because I just feel like it's like a nice little, it's like part of the book. It's part of the character of the book now.
I like that.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm reading, what else have I got on the go? Got a bit of Tony Robbins on the go. I've got a bit of not Matt Manson. What is it? Wait, one sec. It's just behind me. No, it's not. But I'm also, I've also got Lost Connections on the go.
Lost Connections. What's that about?
So that's Johan Hari, and it's about basically it's about anxiety and depression, which doesn't sound so cheery. But it's quite eye opening in terms. It's more about like how people are just after. It's all about connection. So people are just after connection rather than it. Kind of like myth busts a lot of information around antidepressants and stuff like that. How obviously, like, you know, places like America, they're just like they've got huge problems with antidepressants and stuff, and basically how it's all just a load of bullshit. And we all just need to be, you know, more loving to each other. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And then there's another one that I can't remember, but it's also good.
Like it. And what have you been keeping yourself busy with? I know last time we spoke, you were telling me about how this whole lockdown passed whenever we went into it, whatever we're doing right now, whatever life is at the moment, whenever you went into it, you started delivery company, food, you know, takeaway. How's that going?
Unreal. I'm absolutely loving it. I mean, so this is the first time that I've been like self-employed.
Brilliant. How's it feel?
I can't go back. I don't think I'll ever go back to not being self-employed.
Yes. But welcome to the club.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I've like stepped into the light. Like, I mean, I've always known that I wanted to have my own business of some sort. Definitely didn't think it would be like this, but, I came back from, you know, I was in Australia when the pandemic hit. So I came back just with this like plan of like, I need to do my own thing. And it wasn't going to be possible in the current environment, but I was just like, I've just got to make it work. You know, I felt like if I just sort of went back on what I wanted to do just because of the pandemic, that was just like, I would just do that forever. Or it's just using that as an excuse as, well, you can't do it because of this. When, you know, really that's just life, isn't it? And that's just business. We've got to, even if it's a global pandemic, you've just got to go, okay, well, what can I do about it? It's amazing. It's only been going 6 months now. So I say only, I finally kind of got a bit of traction with it, which is good, which is so really good.
For the benefit of people listening who are like, what the hell are they talking about? What is it?
That's a good point. I probably should mention that. It's called Bondi Bowls. So inspired by my time in Bondi. So I guess I've always wanted, when I've been like in the UK, I've always gone like looking for like cool, healthy places to eat. And there's just never been something that's really hitting the mark on that. There's obviously a lot of places out there. But I was living in Newcastle upon Tyne at the time. And there was this place, there's a place called Naked Deli, which is quite a cool place. And I used to go there for lunch every single day. And I was like, it's got to be better than this. It's just got to be better than this. So I went out to Oz for kind of to get the inspiration. Very much found it in like Bondi Beach, the sort of proper like beach vibes, like feel good, look good. And, you know, a lot of the food really does like stand out. It's like vibrant, really like healthy, cool, good vibes. And I was just like, I need to bring this back to the UK sort of thing. So I made a point of kind of working in like the coolest brands that I really connected with. And had a plan to open up my own like shop store in 2020. I set myself a target of like open up a place by the end of 2020. And of course it was just like, couldn't have been worse timing of like the history of our lifetimes to decide to do that. So I ended up having, I think I had like 4 months up in Scotland on the like coast of Scotland because I came back and I just had nowhere to live or be. I was just like, I'm just going to have time up there. At first I was like, it'll be like 2 weeks lockdown or whatever. But obviously it ended up being like 4 months. But that basically gave me like the time to to really like get to grips with what I'm going to do. And then, yeah, and I've literally just started out like with my flat, just like set up the Instagram and just like marketed the shit out of it. Just like in the local area.
I love this because I had this conversation with someone the other day about how if the pandemic is going to give us anything, right? And not to harp too much on about it, but the fact of the matter is that we've all been told to slow down, to stop, basically, to just like be chilled. And if you take what everybody's fighting for, working for, living for, which is to have the best possible time in their life and be as happy as they possibly can, right? The one common denominator that I seem to find every single person talking about is they don't have enough time. Right, don't have enough time to do stuff they actually want to do because they feel like they've got to fill it with work or, you know, whatever, you know, just stuff they've got to fill it with. But right now, we actually are the richest we'll ever be in terms of time in our entire lives, you know? And I think that that's something that not a lot of people are going to realize until it's gone, until we're going back to whatever, 9 to 5, you know, working all 70 hours a week like us Brits like to do. But it's never going to go back to that sort of, we've now seen what is on the other side of the fence and we're never going to go back to it. So in a way, this pandemic has kind of shaped who you are now and what you're doing. But what do you think you've learned most about the fact that you've been almost forced into where you are now, but it's actually been a blessing in disguise?
Yeah. I mean, I like that, what you said about everyone's excuse is always, I've not got enough time, isn't it? And it's just like, you fucking do. You know what I mean? That's just like, that excuse has just gone out the window.
It's a priority thing. You know what I mean? It's not you haven't got enough time. It's just that your priorities are not in the right order. You know,
I couldn't agree more.
Exactly. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
It has been a huge blessing in disguise. And I think, to be honest, I think it has slowed me down, which sounds like a bad thing, but it's made me appreciate and learn a lot more along the way. You know, because obviously I was ready to, I mean, I've managed places before, but I've never been an owner of a place. And that's obviously totally different. So the fact that I can nail the menu, the logistics and all that sort of shit before going, you know, balls deep into the business, it's basically just slowed the whole process down. So that has been a huge blessing in disguise. Which sounds stupid to say that, like, it has actually, in a way, slowed me down. But the other option would have been to not do it at all in this pandemic, which is just, like, crazy. So now, obviously, I've got, like, you know, a customer base that's rolling and that's going. And that as soon as I can have my own place, like, people will be coming in the door rather than walking past going, what the fuck's Bondi Balls?
Love that. So what do you think? What do you think has been the most enjoyable part about it?
I was thinking this week because I was just on a call with a friend there and I said to her, I was like, I've been thinking this week that because there's been a lot of changes in the business and I've been like, I guess it's stress. I haven't really felt stressed about it. It's like, I like haven't been asleep at night because my mind's just like going. Do you know what I mean? When you're constantly thinking like, could do like this, but this is this, isn't it? So it's kind of like excitement mixed with stress. And I was just like, but do you know what? Like, I'm really happy right now. And I was kind of like, it almost confused me because I was like, how am I this sort of stressed, but this kind of content and happy at the same time? And I think I come to the conclusion as to it's just because I've maybe got to a stage where I'm doing it I've found something that, one, it's my own, like we talked about, being self-employed, you know, doing something on your terms is huge. It's so different, right? I think that's it. I think it's doing, obviously I'm doing it on my terms, but obviously I'm doing it because I want to do it, because that's my, like, my passion, my meaning, my purpose, whatever you want to, like, however you want to frame it. So I think that's what I'm like, most enjoying about it. It's just the fact that it's like, it's mine and it's on my terms, I guess.
Yeah, it's that control aspect. You know what I mean? You've taken back, you're not having to adhere to anybody else's rules and figuring out how to do it, you know, anyone else's way. You're doing it your way. And then, so, yes, of course, that's challenging sometimes because it's, you don't know how to do it. You don't know what to do first and all the rest of it. And that's kind of part of the learning process. I'm really interested in what you just said about you're always thinking, you're always on, you're always thinking about what's going on next. And it's quite a common thing amongst entrepreneurs and people that start businesses and people that work for themselves is that they struggle to switch off. You know, like there's a stat that I heard that was 95% of all startups fail. And of the 5% that do fail, 50% of those entrepreneurs develop some sort of mental health problem as a result of it. And it usually stems from things like lack of sleep or lack of nutrition or lack of, you know, exercise, all these things, because we're so obsessed with making sure the business is running and making sure that it's happening and it's going to, you know, it's like your little baby. You want to kind of nurture it until it's able to, you know, walk and crawl and do its own thing. But in that first section period, you do work yourself to the bone trying to make it work. And not everything you try always works as well, which I think is quite a hard one mentally, not just physically. So have you come across any moments like that in your, you know, year, 6 months that you've been running this where you've thought, oh, I'm just going to give up. I can't be asked. This is too much.
I mean, there hasn't been points where I'm going to give up, but there has been a point. I mean, what I am doing at the minute is I'm recording little like voice memos as I go along, and I'm hoping that it's going to then form a podcast that's going to be interesting enough for people to listen to. But I haven't really listened to it back yet, so that might not be true. So you may never hear it. I did a voice memo to myself in maybe January or something, where I sort of had this realization that I was just like, shit, like, so that was maybe 4 or 5 months in or something. And I was just like, this is now got to work. Like, this is my own, pretty much the only thing I've got at the minute. Like, you know, like if this doesn't work, then in the next few months, then I've got to like change up, do something else. Like, would I be giving it up? I don't know. And I was speaking to one of my brothers about this, and he was just like, well, how long are you going to give it? I was like, what do you mean? Like, I'll give it as long as it takes. I'm going to make this fucking work. So I had a bit of a realization where I was just like, it was more like, you know, financially this needs to work. Like I can't keep going on in certain ways or whatever. Can't keep just borrowing money or whatever it might be. And I was like, shit, this something needs to be around the corner. Thankfully, it then came. But yeah, you certainly have those moments.
A question comes to mind, or I always ask myself this, as well as sometimes clients and friends, it's like when they start something or they're doing something new, I ask them, what's the measure of success? Like, what is the measure for you so that you know essentially when you're going to be able to say, yes, this is worth pursuing, or no, I need to basically cut my losses and go the other way?
It's a good question. Are you asking me that directly?
I am. It's coming at you hard and fast. What's your measure of success? At what point do you get to, or what has to happen for you to say, yeah, this is, I've hit my limit with it? Or what is it? How will you know when you've reached the top of the hill and you're like, yeah, okay, I'm plain sailing now?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I guess certain mindsets never have a point where you're happy with it. I mean, I will answer your question. I interviewed my old boss, basically, a guy I used to work for, who that really interesting guy, he's basically a chef, restaurateur, doing everything, you know, won a Michelin star, got an MBE, but he's the most down-to-earth guy you'll ever meet. But I said to him, I mean, obviously I worked for him for like 4.5 years, so I know how like demanding he can be, and and I said, I was like, do you ever think you'll be, I think I used the word content. And he went like, without a pause, he just said, no. Nope. Like that. And I was just like, all right. Okay. And I was just a bit like, fuck. Like, and it really made me think about, I really love Naval Ravikant. And one thing he says is, desire is a contract. Let me get this right. Yeah, desire is a contract with yourself to be unhappy until that desire is fulfilled. Something along those lines. And it almost scares me a little bit, those sort of those sorts of things. You know, it's just sort of like, well, when is enough enough? Or
but then, like, I could throw it straight back at you in the other way and go, if you just set goalposts, so like, let's just say that your measure of success is I'm going to get to X amount of revenue, or I'm going to open a restaurant, or I'm going to have 1,000 people order my food, whatever it is. If you know that that's your measure of success, right, you can always set another one when you get there. But the difference between setting it, achieving it, celebrating it, and acknowledging like, that was what I said I'd do 6 months ago and now I've got it, versus like, oh, but I just want to do a bit more and a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. You feed into that negative feedback loop of like, I'm never accomplishing anything. And you get these moments in your life where you suddenly go like, oh, I'm just like, I'm just tired of kind of pushing. I've never seemed to get anywhere. And then somebody else has to say to you, whoa, hang on. Just take a second and turn around and look at where you've come from. Like all that amazing things that you've done to get to this point. You don't recognize those unless you celebrate the small wins. And those small wins are set by you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in answer to your original question, I think I try and set like quarterly. So at the minute I've got like quarterly goals. I started setting like monthly sales goals. But then I also found myself changing them every so often and just like, oh, I can do way more than that.
So then the question is, how will you know when you've achieved that goal? Like for you, okay, straight up, what is your measure of success? So in the future, you're looking ahead, you're going, right, the business is going to be doing X, Y, and Z. And when it's doing that, or when that happens, that's when I know I've made it to that point. What is that thing?
So I guess at the minute, it's having my own premises.
Cool.
And at the minute, I mean, I would say I had that goal for 2020. That wasn't possible. So I had to move it to 2021. Is that going to be possible in 2021? Who knows?
But this is the important bit. Now that you know that that's your goal, that's the thing that you're kind of aiming towards, everything else focuses around just getting yourself to that premises point where you can literally got your own bricks and mortar and you can say, this is where I am. At that point, pop a bottle of champagne, you know, bring your friends around, celebrate, you know, whatever, and then revisit it and go, cool, what's the next step? What's the next goal? Because at least then you'll be able to sort of reset the tape and go, okay, cool, this is where the next chapter starts from. Because otherwise it seems like just one long chapter that never kind of seems to get to the end. Whereas if you set that goal, you can close that first chapter of your life and go like, do you remember when I was doing it out of my kitchen and I had like, you know, delivery drivers coming to my door? And it will be funny stories rather than it feeling like one long kind of journey you've been on for like 5 years, break it up into those little sections.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you hear a lot of sort of people in later in life, like on podcasts or whatever it might be, a lot of people say, you know, or like sports stars or whatever it might be, like they always, a lot of them say, you know, I wish I'd have maybe like enjoyed it a bit more or, you know, like celebrate, you know, like had the odd like night out or whatever, or just celebrated the achievements along the way. So that makes total sense. Yeah. I think it is easy to get caught up in constantly living in the future. Right.
We should
always be trying to aim to live in the now.
Yeah. But it's so true that, you know, the past has happened. You're not going to change that. The future is, you know, nothing certain until it happens. So all you've got is now. All you've got is what's happening right now. And then, of course, there is an element of planning that. But there's a guy called Benjamin Hardy who talks about kind of planning for the future and kind of, you know, working out what you want and then creating a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. But ultimately, all of those plans lead to the same direction. It's just that, you know, it's instead of going from London to Newcastle via the M1, you maybe take the A1, or maybe you go via, you know, Ipswich and go around the houses. But like either way, you're going to get to your destination. And I think that that's what a lot of people fail to do, is they think that the only way to get there is the way they've thought of once. And then when they don't end up doing it and they find themselves roadblocked halfway through, they give up and turn around and go home.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I always go on about is, and one thing that was a huge turning point for me, in terms of mindset, was progress over perfection.
Yeah.
And it's so true. I mean, it's the same concept. It's just people have this vision in their minds. I mean, the call that I was just on previously to a friend, you know, she was talking about, oh, you know, I'm 28, you know, should I have had kids by now? And all that, you know, all these sorts of things that like the guys and girls like think about. And like, it's natural to think these things. But like, it's just a story that you've heard and you've told, and we tell ourselves, or we've been told, like you say, and you just have it just in your head. And that's it. That's my life. It's going to go like that. And it's just, it's fucking, it couldn't be further from the truth. And like, I wouldn't have it any other way. Do you know what I mean? Like, if life was just simple, if it was one fucking straight path right to the top of the mountain, like, just wouldn't be interesting enough, would it?
Life throws spanners in the works for the sake of it. You know, like we were saying before we got jumped on this call today, that I'm trying to buy a house at the moment, right? And for anyone listening, it's the most stressful thing you could probably ever do. So prepare yourselves if you haven't yet done it. And I take my hat off to everyone that has. But it's the sort of thing where I thought I was moving in a month ago and I'm still not in. And the patience that I've developed over the last month is probably worth more than the last 5 years worth of patience, because I've just had so much out of my control. You know, it's like it's in the hands of other people. And what I've realized is actually that life throws these spanners at you for you to be able to build your confidence, build your character, you know, make you understand that actually you need to, it's almost like giving an opportunity to grow and to learn. And, you know, it also gives you an opportunity to grow some gray hairs at some point in your life, I suppose. But, you know, it is true. You know, if life was just simple as, oh, that's the way I want it to happen, and that's how it's going to go, it'd be boring. It would be so predictable. And then, you know, we would get to the point where it wouldn't be worth taking the risks or worth kind of pushing ourselves, because there's that underlying uncertainty, I think, that drives a lot of people. It's the not knowing if it's going to work. And that's the excitement part of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, going back to when I said I recorded that voice note or whatever it was in January, where I was like, shit, this is going to work. I remember, I'm sure I wouldn't listen to it back, I talked myself all the way around and like came full circle of going like, shit, this needs to work. Or I can't remember what had specifically gone wrong at the time, but like something had gone wrong that I hadn't expected. And then it came full circle and I was just like, well, this is perfect. This is a fucking huge challenge. Like how we're going to nail this. So I totally just like, by talking to myself, I went like full circle and I was just like, fuck, this is exciting. This is like a challenge that you've got to go out and do and nail. That was awesome. Just changing your mindset.
I find mindset such a funny buzzword. I mean, you and I are both in the same sort of space. We love personal development. We love reading. We love, you know, talking to people about kind of philosophies and things that they've done in their life that kind of help them get to where they are now. But the word mindset kind of, sometimes it grates on me a little bit, because it's like, it is exactly what it says on the tin, but it's, I think there's a lot more, there's a deeper element to mindset. And I think it comes down to like your values and kind of your beliefs around what can actually happen. I think mindset is an attitude, whereas your values and beliefs are more sort of innate and a core part of you. And I think if you can change your attitude and therefore change your behavior, you therefore will be able to do different things. There was a quote that I read the other day, and it says, it will explain exactly what I'm trying to say now, but I've forgotten it, and it will come to me in a minute when you're mid-flow and I'll have to rudely interrupt you. No, I'm joking. But yeah, it will come to me in a minute. But yeah, it's that whole thing of believing in what you can do only comes from the background of experiences and things that you've been told. So if you're somebody who has only ever got to this level, right, and you now are like trying to get above that level, you don't know what that above level looks like. So therefore, you're going to have to step outside your comfort zone. You're going to have to change your behaviors. You're going to have to change your attitude in order to get there. But your core values and beliefs will never change, because that's who you are as a person. So it's like changing your attitude to go, no, I can be better than that. Remember that the guy I was thinking of was Johnny Wilkinson on the High Performance Podcast.
Yeah.
Have you heard that podcast?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. So the bit where he talks about how if you just start every day as if it's a fresh slate, you know, don't think about what you've done before that day, just go at what you're doing today with the best of your ability. Because he was saying like, I've won the World Cup, you know, I've won amazing competitions and been the best player in the world. How do I then hit that? How do I become better than that? He can't, like, it's just impossible. So now he's either going to live a life of feeling like he's got to hit that peak all the time and therefore, like, you know, chase the dragon or whatever the expression is, or he can just accept that who he is now
is exactly the best he's going to be. And therefore he can just go from what he is today for the rest of that day and then start again the next day and move forward like that. And it's super powerful. I love that podcast.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I mean, the amount of people that I know that like don't necessarily like listen to as many podcasts or like aren't as into personal development, the amount of people just going like, have you heard the Johnny Wilkinson episode? And it's just like, yes, brilliant. Because I think it was like the fact that it was just like someone like that, someone so like high profile or whatever, and with that sort of background, talking in the way that he did, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And just in the way that he, I mean, I love the way he talks about just like being, you know, you just got to be present and all that. But just how he sort of like describes, you know, like winning the World Cup or playing rugby or whatever is just the same as like doing the washing up. You know what I mean? Like, just like you've got a goal, it's movement. But it's true.
It's true. It is genuinely like he's popped, you know, a shitload of LSD or he's done a bunch of ayahuasca ceremonies and he's just found himself like fully and completely. And he's just like, I wouldn't be surprised if he like floated out of that interview room because he seems so chilled and so like on point and embodied in what he's doing.
Just like, he's just actualized.
Literally actualized. It's so good. So, talking about podcasts, tell me about the flip side. How's it going, and how are you finding podcasting? Like, what do you enjoy most about it?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I get so much out of it. I love it. Funny enough, actually, I interviewed, well, offline, which I know is really annoying to say, but I interviewed my mum and dad last week because
how did that go?
It was amazing because ever since I've been doing the podcast, I've just seen the benefits of sitting down with someone. And like we were talking before we started, like we were talking about how kind of like you can have different styles of podcasts in terms of it could be more kind of like interview based or it could be a bit more like conversational. So like, you know, I'll have like someone that I know that sort of I get on with and I'm like good mates with or whatever, and you can be a bit more conversational. Or, you know, say like my old boss, it was very much like a more of an interview. Although I'd get on with him, but like, I just wanted him to speak and I'll ask a few questions. And that's a good example of like someone that I've worked with quite closely for like 4.5 years. But until you sit down with someone and start asking these questions in like a one-to-one basis, I mean, like you never know them. And I just love like that, getting that, those DMCs, get into the deep meaningful chats with people. So basically I was just like, I started thinking like, I'd love to interview like my mum and dad, like separately, individually, one-on-one, and just ask them like all sorts of, you know, just random things that you just like, I don't know, wonder what dad did when he was my age or whatever. Just like life questions. It was great. Yeah. We got really, really deep with it. I wish I could have recorded it, but I just thought like, they would be weird about it. And maybe I'll do a podcast about the fact that, you know, what I got from it.
I was going to ask you, what was the biggest takeaway for you?
I think just sort of like, it just gave me like a bit more of like a deeper connection with them personally. Do you know what I mean? Just talking about their lives. I just like asked them like, you know, they're both like doctors and whatever. And I was just sort of like, did you enjoy your career? And I just had like a list of like generic life questions, just like, what would you say to your younger self? Like, what was your proudest moment? What was your most challenging moment? And also I think with like my dad specifically, like asking him like, what were your most challenging moments? And he was, to be fair to him, he's really open, you know, like obviously like, I mean, he's like in his like 70s now. So, you know, people of that generation, especially guys, like they're a little bit more reserved and you're trying to like draw things out, but he was dead open and just sort of like talked about like difficult things in his life, whatever it might be. So that was class. So I recommend, you know, you'd have to have a podcast, jump on a Zoom with like a loved one and just interview them. I highly recommend it.
It's funny. My nan is 99. She's actually 100 in a couple of months, which is just bonkers. And when I started this podcast back in November last year, I thought to myself, you know what? I've got the kit. You know, she's still got her marbles and everything. She's just a bit, you know, she's just old. Yeah. Why don't I talk to her about kind of like just life? And it was that same weekend we'd gone to see her my mum had seen her. Anyway, I'd said to my mum about this idea and she's like, why don't you go through our old photo albums and ask, your nan to basically like tell you what's going on in these photos from literally like the 1900s. And I thought, that's such a great idea. And it's amazing how like you could show my nan a picture of something that happened in the news yesterday and she wouldn't remember. But you show her a picture of her as a four-year-old in her like her grandma's arms, black and white, standing at like a beach. She knows exactly what's going on. And it's so true. Like, it just built this really amazing connection. I felt myself just sitting there listening to her for like 20 minutes talking about one photograph.
Yeah. Nah, it's class.
In my mind, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone should do it with the... I think it's a good time to be doing things like that as well. You know, at the minute when we're all stuck in our houses and stuff. Make your own personal family podcast.
And that's it. You know, we live in a generation of media, news, kind of photographs, pictures, videos, everything. Like, we live in a media world, right? The information world, I think someone's called it once. So think about like our parents didn't have that much ability to take a photo or take a video kind of personally. They had to kind of keep a track of it. They had to either buy a really expensive camera and take it around with them, and it was always big and bulky, or they just had to sort of, you know, remember this stuff. But nowadays we take so many photos on our phones and so many videos, and like, you know, even us doing this will be forever on the internet, and we can find it whenever we want. So it's kind of amazing that I think our lives would be much more documented as a result of technology, which in a way is, I think, really, really cool. You know, kids will be able to grow up looking at thousands of kids' photos of them, whereas you and I, I'm sure, we probably have like one from each of our birthdays up to the age of about six.
Yeah, no, it's so weird. I mean, like I always, when I was employing people, like, I would always look at their Facebook and Instagram. Like, I remember when I first started employing people, like, everyone was like, "Jesus, you creep, what are you doing?" Like, now it's just like standard practice. Like, it's information that's out there, and I'm gonna go and utilize it. But yeah, now it's just like even more and more and more. I was watching Friends the other day. It's timeless, by the way. And you used to watch Friends, right?
I did.
There's some crazy people out there that didn't watch it.
On that, I used to get when I first started in the modeling days back in the very early sort of 2008-09. I used to be people used to think I was Joey Tribbiani's doppelganger.
What?
Yeah, young Joe. Look, Google young Joey Tribbiani, and then like and you might see it. It's quite funny, but yeah, that used to be my like. Oh my God, do you know you look a bit like Joey from Friends? I'm like, yeah, I know.
No way. No, I can't see it.
Yeah, it's the beard. It's the beard, that's what it is.
Maybe. Yeah. Anyway, I was watching an episode and they were doing like it was Ross and Rachel's baby, Emma. It was her first birthday, and they were doing like a video camera thing of her for her first birthday to give her on her 18th birthday. And Chandler was just like... So it's 2020, and I was just like, oh my God, like, as in it was 2020, like last year. And so it's like, so Emma from Friends will be 19 right now.
Oh my God, that's made me feel really old.
I know, yeah, crazy.
So
I made us go totally off track there. We could talk about
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll go back to my list of very, very long questions that I wrote. No, it's you're absolutely right though. I've always think that about the Simpsons as well. I used to love the Simpsons when I was growing up, and like I've lost as much interest in them now, but like they're still timeless. You know, you can watch an episode of the Simpsons any day of the week and they're always good. But the references of them are, you know, there's some of them you think the future, flying cars and all that sort of stuff. And it's literally like 2015 or something. It's crazy. Yeah. So crazy. Who would be your ideal guest to have on a podcast? Like, who would be like the creme de la creme? Oh my God, you'd fall over backwards if they said yes to you interviewing them.
That is a good question. There's a guy, obviously I love him so much that I've now forgotten his name. there's a guy who started, have you heard of TOC? It's basically a reservation system, which I know sounds really boring. But he's like a businessman. So he's got like I can't remember his name. I will find out his name by the end of this like conversation. But he started up a restaurant called Alinea. It's one of like the best restaurants in the world. It's on the Netflix Chef's Table, that's it. And it's the one where they have like balloons, like food balloons and like painted tables. It's like fucking wacky shit.
Wow.
But it's like a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. Grant Hackett is the chef. At least I remember that name. And he's got a great story in that he had like throat cancer and went through that and was still working and recovered from that. And his name's going to come to me. But he's got a background of very much like a financial background and opened up a restaurant without anything. We didn't know anything about restaurants. And that, so he sort of like really works off like first principles. So it was just like, when they're creating the restaurant, it was just like, oh, we're going to put candles on the table. And he was just like, why? Why are we going to put candles on the table? You're just like stupid. It's constantly asked the question of like, why? Or like, why are candles romantic? Or like all this sorts of shit. And basically they had this really successful restaurant. But then he created a reservation system for their restaurant, which is basically like a ticketed service. So, you know how you go to the theatre or a show of some kind, you buy a ticket, and it's if you can't go, then you don't get your money back, or whatever. So he basically created a reservation system on that basis, in that you pay up front. You don't even pay a deposit. You pay £100 per person for the meal or whatever. If you book it a month in advance, then you get the idea. And so, yeah, he created this reservation system, which is now like worldwide. This huge company. And yeah, he's just such a fucking interesting character. So interesting that I can't remember his name.
Actually, now I was half expecting you to say some, you know, huge, great, big world leader or celebrity or whatever. I did not expect that, but that he does sound interesting. Like, it's a good example of somebody who has kind of found their success through doing the thing they love.
Yeah. I mean, he just didn't have, he didn't have any background in restaurants or reservations. You know, he's just sort of like, he's seen problems and just took the, what I love about him is that he just looks at things from first principles. It's just a, like, why do people do that? Why are people done in a certain way? Why do we do things in a certain way? He was going to publish a book. And he realized that like the publishers just make shit tons of money for doing just nothing. Why don't we publish it ourselves? And this, he learned how to publish a book and like, oh, he's just an interesting guy. I'm going to look him up, see what he's called.
Like it. Talking about principles, what do you live your life by? Do you have any principles that you are hard and fast by?
I have core values. So I tried to make mine into a word to make them, and it just didn't work. Best I could come up with was Hold FM. So if anyone's a radio station, maybe a podcast, maybe I should rename the podcast.
That is jokes. I need to know what Hold FM stands for now.
So we've got helping others with humility is the first one. Used to just be helping others, and then added on the humility thing, because I think I found that sometimes when you help others, you can try and, I don't know, you can do it to kind of like build up your own ego. I think there was maybe a fine line there. Like I remember when I started doing charity work, I felt really good. And you know, if you're doing something like that, if you put it on Facebook, you get loads of likes or whatever. Back in the day, on Facebook, and I was like, "This is wrong. Why am I getting adulation when I'm trying to help people? I don't want to build up my ego." And I was just like, "There needs to be a better way of doing this. I think you need to do it in like a more humble way instead of doing it to put it on Facebook." Not that I was doing it to do that, but anyway. So helping others with humility. O is ownership or responsibility. So I think the main reason I have that in, obviously just taking ownership of your own life, whatever. But I think it's more, for me, it's more not focusing on the things that you can't control, and only thing focusing on the things that you can, right? Yeah. You know, I remember like playing rugby when we were younger. One of the guys used to say that, control the controllables. That's what he used to say. I was like, what? You know what I mean? Like, can't get it. Yeah, just like, don't get it. But now I do. I totally get it. Hold FM. What else? What was L? Come back to L. D, deep connection. So that comes back to, why I started the podcast. Deep. I think I found that spending time, like how I socialized has changed. I don't know whether that's come with age or maturity or fucking pandemic. but just like, I think I appreciate just like one-on-one conversations like this way more than I realized. I think in group conversation, in like group scenarios, I used to be the class clown when I was a kid. And then I still have that like inside me where I just have to like make people laugh or like try and like entertain. And I think I just like, I need to like, just like, shut up, Jamie, just like, stop it. and where else we got? Deep connection. Oh, FM. Why can't I remember? I actually have them on my wall. FM. Wait 1 second. You can cut this out if you want, but I'm going to get them because I believe in them so much that I've framed them and put them on the wall. Yeah, I still can't remember them. Much like I can't remember the name of the guy who I want on my podcast.
Hey, look, it's Sunday. We'll let you off. I'll just fill in the gap with some interluded music. And I agree though. Like the podcast, the values thing is, who was the guy that created the, there's an article on it. It's like a 3 hour, like long page article written by, I want to say his name's Nathan, someone or other. And he does the values thing. And there's an article written by him. And I'm pretty sure Taylor Pearson, not Nathan, I was totally wrong. Taylor Pearson. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, it rings a bell, yeah.
Yeah, so he's written this huge article about values and kind of explaining them. And he says that, you know, you should have 5 core key values that you live your life by. And if you can make them into a word, just like you tried, it makes it just a lot easier to be able to push them through.
I think that's the exercise that I used.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, after the short ad break, I've got my values.
So awesome. I kept the guests really entertained.
Also, Nick Kokonas is the name of my ideal podcast guest.
Love that.
I will learn his name before I get him on the podcast.
Might help.
Yeah. I think I did actually check how your name was said when you're on my podcast. I think it's like a worry of mine. Okay, so I missed out L. So that was long-term decision-making. So I this one I stole from Naval because I think so when I was trying to start, this is a good example. When I was trying to start the business, I was like, oh, I need capital. Right. So I've got a flat that I bought in Newcastle where I used to live. I was like, I'll sell the flat, which is all well and good. But it was just, you know, I was just looking at the short term, you know, like eating a donut is like a short term win, right? You feel good. But then like in the long term, like eating the donut's a bad idea, right? So in the same way that like selling my investment now is a stupid idea compared to selling it in 10 years time, 20 years time. We'll see. I might need it for the business one day. But you know, but like having that principle in the back of my head of just like always thinking long term, whether that's like, but you know, are you purchasing for the business or just making little decisions, I thought was hugely valuable.
But I'm going to just challenge that for a second because I think this is interesting. When does the long-term value stop? As in when do you then go, okay, I've waited long enough now, I'm going to cash in on the value?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I guess it's almost similar to what we were saying earlier about when is enough in terms of like wanting more and more and more? And yeah, that's a good question, because I kind of like one thing my dad mentioned in our interview was he sort of like talked about like his inheritance and stuff like that. Like, oh, I'm proud of having children and they're part of your inheritance. And I was a bit like, what? Like, do people live? Because a lot of people sort of live for when they're living. Like, one of the questions on the High Performance Podcast is legacy important to you? And I think it's a really interesting question, because some people really value legacy. Mm. And it's sort of like, yeah, I don't know whether I would. Like, when you're dead, you're dead. Obviously, you care about people that you love and you want them to have a future and all that. But I think it's an interesting one to think about.
I suppose it depends how you describe legacy. Like, I think there's, in my opinion, legacy comes down to, I'd say, three things. But one would be money. Like, do you want to make enough money to be able to ensure that the people after you, your family, family's family, are supported, and so they don't have to ever worry? Doing something, or be known for doing something. So, like, I don't know, take Elon Musk, for example. His legacy is going to be the fact that he got us to Mars, probably, right? That's, you know, being known for doing something. Or is it that you were a legacy within your close knit of people? Like, you were someone who just showed up all the time, you had integrity, you were honest, you were always there, like all the characteristics of somebody who is just a solid human that didn't necessarily do anything like put us on Mars or make $1 trillion. You were just a good human. So, like, you know, and I think that it's quite contradictory to think that actually in order to be one of them, you have to potentially sacrifice the others.
Well, you don't believe that?
No, I think I do. I think I believe that you can't be all of them.
Mm.
I don't know. Could you think of, I don't know, can I, I'm trying to think of somebody who has like done an amazing thing and probably made money at the same time doing it, but was also like a solid human and didn't like neglect their family as a result of working too hard at their job.
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult to tell, especially with kind of just people in high profile people, you know, like, I don't know, I think of like Bill Gates as this like really great, nice, amazing guy who like helped the world in terms of charities, and he might be an arsehole. I've no idea. Do you know what I mean?
He could be doing it as a result of the fact that he hasn't been like that for the most of his career. Like, you know, I don't know much about Bill Gates, as you said, but like he could have been 23-hour worker, kind of like doing everything other than, you know, what, like looking after. And now he's like, I've made my billions, I'm going to now start doing some good for the world. And it could just be like a guilt thing, a guilt trip.
Yeah. So I think maybe it's like, it's what matters to, it's what's going to matter most to you. So like, I guess you mentioned three things, like essentially like money, status, or what the people close to you are going to think of you.
Yeah, your integrity.
Integrity. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, people talk about like, oh, what will be written on your gravestone, or like what will be said at your funeral or whatever. Like, no one's going to say John made 4 million in the year of 2022. Like, obviously, like money would never really come into it in terms of like what they've said about you. I mean, achievements might do.
On that though, just because there's a book I read recently by Morgan Housel, the Psychology of Money, and he talks about there's a famous story of a guy called, I'm going to call him Mr. Joe, who was a janitor at a high school in America, and he was just so happy with living his very simple life as a janitor. But he took like the majority of his money and put it into index funds, like Warren Buffett style. And when he retired, he was like, he had like 80 million or something because of the compound effect. And he then literally gave his wife 2 million, or put 2 million in a bank, and then gave the rest to charity. So in a weird way, he kind of is like all three, because he's kind of made money through doing something not necessarily that special, but he's then given that money to do something special and kept his integrity at the same time.
Yeah. And then I guess, has he got the status of being a nice guy as well?
Mm. As a result of what he did during his life, and because no one knew that he was that rich, or knew that he was doing what he was doing until he kind of like cashed it in and then like unfortunately died, like, you know. But that was what he was known for, and so he didn't do it for his own sake, he did it for other people's, but then ultimately receive that benefit anyway.
Yeah. And I think that is just being humble is a huge value to have, or I don't know if you've got the value, but like skill, it's almost like a skill, isn't it? Like, you know, like it's so easy to not be humble, like in our lives now. Like, you know, you could post whatever you want on like social media and say, I'm doing this or whatever. Like, but if you have the ability to do something that you feel is right, and you're helping others, and if you have the ability, it's almost the ability now to not put it on social media or Facebook or whatever. If you have that ability to just go, yeah, I did the right thing, and I don't need to tell anyone about it. And I think not telling anyone about it trains you to really appreciate why you do things as well. Because if you're going to do the charity work to put it on Facebook, then like that's not why you should be doing the charity work. You should be doing it because it's what you believe is like right.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's exactly what you should be doing. But the thing that comes to mind there is also like, you don't know what your values are necessarily in life until you've kind of experienced a bit of life to know whether you feel right or wrong or whatever about something. I think that like I teach people about core values and aspirational values, right? So you've got your core values that are kind of like, you know, you think it's wrong when somebody steals from someone, or you think it's wrong to be dishonest or whatever it might be. And that's like an innate part of you that's like, I'm never going to change my mind on that. But then you have these aspirational values that change as your life goes along. So when you're at school, it's to be like, you know, in the football team or best of your class. Then as you get a bit older, it's like to be a bit popular, or to maybe like, you know, pass your test first or whatever it might be. And then as you get, you know, go through life cycles, things change, career, kids, family, whatever. And so therefore, somebody's aspirational values at the end of their life will be very different to the beginning of their life. And if they're not, then that's a core value that they're not recognizing. So for someone like the janitor, Joe, I'm sure like at the beginning of his life, he didn't think if he saved £20 a week or whatever it was to then, and it would accumulate into millions at the end of his life. He didn't know that then he was going to give it to charity. But I think somewhere along the line, he thought to himself, well, what do I need all this money for? Somebody, you know, he's maybe seen people that want it or need it better than him, and therefore then giving it away.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how, I guess you said the aspirational values are going to change over our lives. Like I've been thinking over the past like few months, right? I think I've got this like theory, and we talked about when you came on the flip side about like your like fitness menopause, or both our fitness menopauses, if you like. I think you called yours your midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And I feel like we need to have more hope in your life, more lifespan, Jack. I think we can call it a quarter life crisis, I think. But I think I was thinking about like when you're maybe like early teens or before being a teenager, right? You have like, obviously, like what I said, you have like an idea of life, which might be like false and it's going to totally change. But you have like, so for example, like I remember thinking like, I will never drink alcohol. I was just like, that's so wrong. Like, why would you do that to your body? And then obviously a few years later, you know, like the social pressures come in, and it's like the main thing when you're a teenager is you just want to fit in. And I don't think that's wrong necessarily. So obviously I just like that like principle went out the window. And then I think what I've done is come like full circle potentially, not necessarily on alcohol in particular, but like, you like get to your fitness menopause, you're 25, 30 or whatever, and you kind of almost go back to a lot of the thoughts. It might just be like, I really liked swimming when I was that age. Now I've got back into swimming, or like little stuff like that that I've noticed that I think you almost go like full circle with these sort of like just changes in your life. And I think it's maybe, my theory is that it's maybe just like in your teens and 20s, it's like social pressure that's just like boxing you in, and it's like and it kind of just, yeah, boxes you in.
I think as well on that, there's a lot of people who hang around in life for the person they were when they were in their 20s, and they are still trying to live the life that they were then in their 30s and 40s, and actually it's not serving them anymore. And so you see these people who are still living for the weekend at like 35, 40, and it's like, cool, do that every now and again, but surely there's more important things in your life than just living for the weekend. Do you know what I mean? You see these like groups of lads going out and like getting absolutely retardedly drunk on you know, whatever, WKDs and Strawpedos and stuff, kind of like the middle of the day on Saturday. Just like, come on guys, really? Like, you know, if that's once every now and again, but you see them, the same people over and over again, kind of just doing that, it just kind of, it makes you think like, what are you hanging on for? And it's usually for each other. So it's that kind of thing. Everyone's scared to kind of leave the group or leave the kind of status quo because they'll feel like an outcast. And it comes back to what you were saying earlier about fitting in. But actually the moment you step aside from that and start doing what you know you can do, you start to find new people that are in that space for you anyway. And kind of coming full circle to this conversation, it's like podcasting, you know, you find amazing people that you have deep conversations with, who then you become friends with because of the fact you had a conversation about something you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a huge part of that is taking yourself out of, I don't mean you have to ditch all your friends necessarily, but like changing your social environment can be so beneficial to realizing that, and I think if I hadn't have moved abroad, I wouldn't have started the podcast, because maybe I'd have thought, oh, what will people at work think, or what will my friends think, or, well, I don't want to say that in case so-and-so is listening or whatever. But then you strip that away when you move. It's like if you might move jobs, move cities, move schools, move unis. It's like an opportunity to, and you can reinvent yourself if you really want. Yeah. But it more importantly, it brings you that like realization that you don't have to think of what your best mate Dave will say, or you don't have to be constantly in that kind of environment. And it's easy to just be comfortable in that environment. And it's also difficult because obviously like your friends are your friends, and you might have been friends with them since you were young or whatever. But you don't have to not be friends with them. It's just people need to grow and move apart. It's just life.
And that's it. The growth aspect is the bit that I find so important around. If you're not looking back at your Facebook, Instagram, Twitter profile a year ago and embarrassed about what you were posting, then you're not growing enough. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Jamie, this has been awesome. I've loved having chats with you, man. This is, I feel like this could be a regular occurrence because it's just so nice to have a deep and meaningful with somebody who's just like on the same level. So thanks for sharing your evening with myself and everybody else listening. If people want to find out about Bondo Balls, Flipside Podcast, and just a bit more about you, where can people find you?
Yeah, just follow us on Instagram. So the podcast is at Flipside Pod, and the business is at Bondi Balls UK. And if you happen to live in Manchester, listen to this, then I can deliver to you. Otherwise, you can buy some t-shirts online, but that's about it.
Love that. I might look at getting a t-shirt. That sounds fun.
Yeah, do it, man.
Love that. Good stuff. Man, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking to you very soon, and we'll do this again sometime.
For sure, man. Cheers, man.